Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 18th, brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and I'm with Jim Allen. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Hey, John. I'm doing really well. How you doing tonight?
No pizza, no ice cream, none of the fun stuff, but I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there.
So I see.
Conserving energy.
Not what you're doing, okay.
I'm enjoying the relaxation that comes with conserving energy and knowing that I'm saving money.
Wow. Close to everyone's hearts out there.
As long as
I like the pizza and ice cream idea too, but you know, we all gotta struggle a little bit.
We gotta suck it up sometimes.
We do indeed, as opposed to just sucking.
Well, today we've got an interview with the Hiroshima Carp closer, Dennis Sarfate. We're going to talk about the end of a big streak, the All-Star Series, and a lot more. So let's get started with Clearing the Bases. All right, I talked with Dennis Sarfate during the week, and you'll hear it in the interview, but he's really working to fit in with the team and the culture and the whole experience of pitching in Japan and having success in this country. Although I can't say the same for myself cuisine-wise. I didn't try to fit in, as you well know. As you well know, but I've made it through 21, almost 22.
Pizza and ice cream donations are welcome. happily accepted by Mr. Gibson.
Every day of the week. Every day
of the week.
But anyway, thanks to Dennis Sarfate, the Carp are only six games under 500. They're just two out of the third and final playoff spot, and there's still a lot of time. A lot of things can happen. You never know.
No, not with the Central League this year. I mean, the Bay Stars are even not out of it. They're just playing like they're out of it.
The Bay Stars are not even out of it. I think they're out of it.
You didn't go out on a limb. No,
I'm going to call this one.
No.
Especially after tonight. Poor Michael Westbay. I'm sorry, dude, man. I apologize on behalf of the Bay Stars to so many of their
fans. That's rude.
They came back from 6-0, man, and they took the lead. And two bad pitches, two misplaced pitches, and they were losing again. I mean, you can't recover from that mentally. That's just too much. I mean, come on.
We'll see. I'm not counting anybody out. I learned my lesson.
All right. Well, you learned your lesson. I haven't learned mine. I'm counting them out. But the Carpers still.
Okay. Set the date here. It is now. It's now July 18th, and John Gibson says the Bay Stars are officially out of it. Unofficially out of it.
Another time of death.
Come on, Bay Stars.
Hey, I root for them. I really like their uniforms and paraphernalia and stuff, and the fans. The fans are truly fans of baseball.
Okay.
Man.
Well, let's get back to Dennis Sarfate.
Yeah, let's get back. In fact, let's just go straight to the interview. All right, I'm here with Dennis Sarfate, the closer for the Hiroshima Carp. Thanks a lot for taking the time to join us.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, we really appreciate having you on the show. I know it's your first year in Japan and everything. As far as I could see, you had no major league saves. So when did you become a back of the bullpen type pitcher?
My first year closing was last year when I got designated before spring training. Knew I was going to go to Norfolk AAA, and they just gave me the opportunity. Ended up getting hurt the first month. I tore my oblique. I got that postponed for about a month, but when I came back from that, I was able to regain the role and really blossomed it and had fun doing it and really loved it.
The oblique on your pitching side.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a rash of those, I would say, the last 5 years of oblique muscles everywhere.
That's probably the biggest injury now, I'd say, that's really getting to the point where guys can't play with it. I felt like someone was shooting me with a gun or stabbing me with a knife every time I threw a ball.
Oh, no.
So it's one of those injuries that is really tough, and, I mean, I think there's probably been at least 20 this season in the big leagues that you look at a guy's out with an oblique injury.
Yeah, and they're nagging injuries that, you know, if it's a batter, he can't even think about swinging a bat.
Oh, absolutely not.
And pitchers can't pitch it all either. So, man. Yeah, well, good to know that you're back. And you say blossomed in the role. What did you expect to do when you came to Japan and joined the Carp?
You know, I thought I was going to be a sixth inning guy. You know, my idea when I got here was they had, Schultz, coming back, and they had Naga, and I was just going to probably be a middle relief type guy. And
yeah, that's Nagakawa, right?
Yeah, Nagakawa. Mm-hmm. And I came in great shape. I came in, I wanted to prove myself. I know first impressions are really big here.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
You know, I've worked out with Jeff Williams before, who's the pitcher with Hanshin. I've worked out with J.P. Powell, John Powell, who played here. And they just told me, they said, hey, when you get there, make sure you make a good first impression, and that's going to really set you off. And that's what I came in trying to do, and I was able to, I guess, open some eyes in Okinawa and Nichinan. And, you know, when we got back to Hiroshima, Nomura talked to me and said, you know, we're going to probably go with you in the ninth inning, so let's keep it going. And, you know, if you need any help, just let us know.
Man, well, that's, I mean, and you're strict, the walkout ratio, your whip, everything. I mean, everything's good. You talked to me earlier this season at Save the Dome, when you hooked up out there, and you talked about your strikes to walk and said it had been improved in Japan here. Why do you think that is?
You know, I've always led the league. Like, if you go back when I was, like, one of the top prospects as a starter, I was number one in the Southern League in walks 2 years in a row. In the PCL, I was the same thing. At the big league level, I was all right until about 08. I walked a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then 09 got hurt, still walked a few. And then last year, I think I had only 25 walks and 50-something innings. That was, like, the first time where it was, like, less than, you know, a walk every two innings. And now, like, this year, I've never had anything like this where I can go, you know, 10, 15 innings without walking a guy.
Is that you challenging hitters with more fastballs or more stuff that you're better at controlling it, or is that just a difference in the baseball strategy over here?
I think I might have just matured a little bit as a pitcher, knowing that, you know, you can throw strikes with good stuff and get guys out. You don't have to try and pitch around guys. And I feel like just watching the games here, you know, I get to watch a lot of baseball just sitting there for the first, you know, eight innings trying to see if I'm going to get in the game. And
right.
I feel like so many guys here pitch around contact. You get 0-2, and then it's like ball one, ball two, ball two. Now it's 3-2.
Yeah, yeah. Watching a lot of
things.
Go ahead. You know,
and I watched our relievers walk guys in close games, and it's like we walk guys instead of giving up hits, and I feel like they're happier with that than just challenging guys because they're so scared to give up that hit that's going to, you know, or a home run. And it's
yeah.
Like, for me, I'd rather go after a guy, and, you know, I've gotten beat twice this year. You know, I gave up two solo shots and one run leads, and one to Valentin and one to Nakajima, and I had both guys 0-2 or 1-2, and it's just one of those things where I'm going after them. If I get hit, I'm going to get hit, but I'm not going to give guys free bases here and go about it that way, so.
It's the American way.
Right.
It's the American way. I wouldn't say it's bad. I wouldn't say it's good. I mean, you know, in either case, in any case, you always have to make a pitch.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to throw it over the plate to get them out, and normally. And, you know, it's their job to hit it if you do throw it over the plate. So, I mean, you're always at risk if you're around the plate. Now, you've been getting lefties and righties out at an equal clip this season. Is that par for the course for you?
Yeah, you know, I've always been, I think I'm actually better against lefties more times than righties. I don't know why that is. I've always had success against left-handed hitters. So, I think that's mainly because I like to go, I'm a fastball down and away guy, and I feel like that's a good spot. I get in on lefties with it, and I'm away from righties.
Mm-hmm.
That might work out. My curveball's better against lefties, I feel. I really can throw it. I like the back door a lot.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, you know, this year I just developed that split finger that I started throwing about a month ago, and that's really just got me right to where I need to be, and it's kind of getting people off my fastball and keep them from cheating on me, and
mm-hmm.
It's just been a pitch that's been a real positive pitch, but from overall career-wise, I'm probably right about even with both lefties and righties.
Now, the forkball is something you started throwing it in games about a month ago, but you've been working on it for a while?
I had it in 08 in the big leagues, got hurt the next, that offseason, that next year, and I just didn't have the arm speed back. I was hurt pretty much all of 09.
Mm-hmm.
Last year in 2010, my curveball was such a good pitch that I just went in the game with fastball curveball. And, my arm feels great now. My body feels like it's in the best shape of its, you know, of my life. And I was able to, you know, I started throwing it one day with Bullington out in the field. And
uh-huh.
I said, I'm going to fiddle with this a little bit. And, I threw it in the bullpen and I threw one to Ishii warming up before a game. And I think he liked it. And then he called it in the game. I ended up getting a strikeout on it. And now it's just been one of those pitches, where, you know, it's really blossomed, and it's been a great pitch for me to go to, especially heading to count 0-2.
I bounce it easily.
Mm-hmm.
Like I hurt the other day in Onomichi. I hung a split to Ishikawa, and he hit it the other way for a single. Ended up coming around the score, but it's been a great pitch for me so far, and I'm going to continue to throw it.
Now, you say you're in the best shape of your life, which actually happened to me at the age of 30. Is that because, you know, you just more in touch with your body, or is it just something that you just stopped getting injured, or you changed your strength regimen?
I've always been a lifting guy. I lift a lot. I've always run a lot. I just think it's Japan, the culture here. I walk everywhere during the day. I ride my bike to the field. I feel like I don't eat as many meals, and the portions that I eat are definitely smaller. Like, you're in the big leagues. You get meals out there every game, and they're, you know, five-star dining meals. It's steak.
Seen them. Yeah, it could kill a horse.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I got here, and I just, you know, we ran so much in spring training, and I thought I was in good shape when I got here. I work out at a facility in Arizona where Pedroia and Ethier and all those guys, you know, we all train together.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was in great shape, and I got out here, and after the first week, I couldn't even walk in Okinawa. And I realized, I was like, all right, maybe I'm not in as great a shape as I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these guys, they're amazing how they can run and how their bodies, you know, we have a guy, Aoki, who throws, and he's been in 40-something games already, and I swear he's thrown in at least, he's warmed up every game, I think. And it's just like, I don't know how their body, in the States, guys don't do that, you know, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's part of it. I think the eating is part of it. You know, there's not a bunch of junk in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Get one meal there and that's it. And I think that's been the biggest thing.
Okay. Now, you've seen or pitched in probably most of the parks around Japan now. What's your assessment of the ballparks? Are they hitter's parks? Which ones are hitter's parks? Which ones are pitcher's parks?
You know, I've always had a problem with the whole hitter's park, pitcher's park thing. The way I see it, if you get balls up in the zone, guys hit it, it's always a hitter's park. I mean, I've seen balls fly out of Hiroshima, you know, Mazda Stadium, that I didn't think, you know, were going to go, and they go, and they call our park a pitcher's park. There's cheap homers, though. I've definitely seen some first row or, you know, Tokyo Dome and some of these places where, you guys got missed hits it, and you're like, wow, I can't believe that ball just got out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think they all play pretty fair. I think it's just one of those things where you see it and you don't really want to say, oh, that was a no-doubter. I know I've given up 2 no-doubters this year. But I haven't really noticed a big thing where it's like, oh, man, we're getting killed because of the field. I think the turfs are a big thing because all these guys slap the ball and run out of the box. And a lot of these guys are getting these hits, and it's just all they do is slap the ball. It takes a nice hop, and they beat it out at first, and it's just amazing. You don't get that in the States at all.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed. I was going to ask you about why you think there's not so many no-hitters here in Japan, but, I mean, it's kind of obvious because there's so many slap-and-run hitters that, you know, your infield puts a lot of pressure on infields, and there's bound to be a guy fast enough to beat out some hits once in a while. In fact, tonight there was only one hit at Kleenex Stadium. So in 12 innings for the Eagles, they only had one hit. But the mindset and the style of hitting is so much different from the States that we're not going to see as many no-hitters over here. So
absolutely. I feel like these guys get two strikes on them as a hitter. And I feel like they're in the States, the guy gets two strikes on him and he's still trying to take a good swing. He's trying to get on base. Here, it's like, all right, don't strike out. And they'll foul off pitches. And that's what I was getting early on. I was throwing, you know, I was facing 3 hitters and throwing 21 pitches in an inning. And I just couldn't figure out why. And I just, all these foul balls kept adding up. And I think that's why you've seen most of this league. I think every pitcher in this league throws a split.
Yeah.
I think that's the equalizer pitch. It's one that where a lot of these guys are off-balance swingers, if you watch them. A lot of them on their front foot. You know, we have a few guys that, you know, fly open or they're looking at the first base coach after they swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think if you work the plate front to back as opposed side to side, just going in and out, it's a much better feeling. You're going to have more success, I think.
Well, you're having a good run here in your first year, which is, you know, it's really difficult for pitchers. I've seen pitchers come over and really struggle and then end up going home right away. But it's good to see some foreign pitchers come over here and from the get-go have some success.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I don't really look at that stuff and look at all the – you can get tied up in those numbers, and then before you know it, I've blown 6 or 7 in a row, you know. So I try to just think about saves as much, and –
if I'm getting saves and we're winning games and I'm happy, I just want to win. And the success that I've had here, I mean, Bolton and the success Brian Bullington's had, I think we're just guys that adjust real well. We go out to the with the culture and we eat, you know, different foods. We hang out with the guys. We talk to the guys on our team. And I think if you can just get through that barrier and stop looking for all of the things like back at home, like trying to find all the American restaurants, and it ain't going to happen. You know, you got to adjust to the culture and just accept it. I think it's an unbelievable culture. Before and after the tsunami, I mean, these people are just resilient, and what they went through with the tsunami and the earthquake is just unbelievable how they've recovered from it. And I just think that's probably the biggest thing guys have a trouble coming over here and doing well, is they just get caught up and they miss home, and then they become miserable and they start thinking about the end of the season, and you just can't play like that.
No, you can't, but you've been doing a great job, and keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Thanks, John.
All right, we certainly appreciate you joining us, and good luck the rest of the way.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, bud.
Bye.
Well, yeah, I talked to Dennis the other day, and I was really impressed by his grasp of the challenge that he's facing. I mean, it's just not just on the field, but also dealing with the culture and dealing with a number of things, and keeping it on a very positive level and keeping it in very simple terms. That is so hard to do because you're confronted with so many things that are different and alien. You know, if you're Matt Merton and you're suffering from not having Chick-fil-A or whatever that place.
Chick-fil-A.
Is that what it is?
It's Chick-fil-A.
That's
how you pronounce it. I was taught when I went home on a trip.
Okay, well, we people from the Bay Area have no clue what that is. It's a gas station or what? I don't know.
Stop it. You people from the Bay Area have no clue. You don't have to continue the sentence after that. But
you're only saying that because the Dodgers are in last place.
Oh, another shot to my ribs. You will pay, Jim Allen. You will pay.
Probably. Yes.
Dennis is doing a good job, and he's got a great attitude about making the adjustment, which is something that is very difficult for a lot of players who come over. And I talked to him about, you know, being a pitcher and seeing so many pitchers come over here and expecting to be able to dominate and just not being able to get the job done. And, he understands. He understands the type of batters he's dealing with. He understands being a professional. And
right.
You look at his numbers. I mean, geez, before today, which is Sunday, he struck out 52 batters in 35 plus innings, and his WHIP is 0.87, and he's only walked 7 guys. You know, with all those strikeouts, so the strikeout to walk ratio is awesome. The 1.77 ERA, the 21 saves, which are, you know, leading the Central League. I mean, he's getting the job done. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I mean, just when you're striking out 40% of the guys you're facing, it really doesn't matter that the Carp defense is behind you. And I say that they're behind him, but you just don't quite know where that is.
They're behind him all the way.
they have some terrific athletes, but they just haven't really had a team that has gelled in recent years.
I agree, and, you know, I think they're pretty strong up the middle, fairly strong, at least adequate, but at the corners they've been questionable at times. And Kurihara, when I talked to him earlier this season and asked him what's on his mind when the, you know, pitchers are out there doing well and doing their best, and he's thinking about hitting. So.
but he's a good fielder. He just needs to... He needs to actually be hitting so that he can start thinking about his fielding for a change. But he is when he's focused, he's as good as anybody at first base.
I would hope that he is, but I'm not sure. And one day we're going to have Michael Westbay to talk about defensive on the show to talk about defensive numbers, as well as one of the scouts I know, and talk about who the best defenders are at certain positions around the diamond. I'm going to do that hopefully soon, but depends on everyone's schedules. Like I said, I joked before, it's hard to get two people to sit down once a week together. It's even harder to get three.
We ought to get Kurihara on this show. He's a hoot.
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. Dennis also talked about throwing his curve and his split finger pitches, and talked about how he's in the best shape of his life, and he's over 30, and his arm's in good condition. This looks like a guy who's coming together at the right time, especially for a team like that that hadn't had a good closer since, I guess, Nagakawa 3 years ago, 4 years ago was getting the job done.
Sure.
But since then, they've kind of been up in the air. And I still think that team needs a really good setup man, a good eighth inning guy or seventh inning guy, somebody they can bring in to put out fires if they're going to make that next move, into the top three. They got the job done today in a game against the Dragons. Junpei Shinoda only went about five innings, and they brought in guys and pitched four scoreless innings to close the game out. But that hasn't been the norm this season. They've been bringing in guys in close games. If it's not Dennis out there, they've been giving up runs and giving up leads and struggling. So they get another guy or somebody steps up to fill in that hole in the seventh inning, eighth inning. I think they can make that run into the playoff spot. Like I said, they're not that far out.
Well, I'll tell you, I think, it's possible. I mean, the Carp really have struggled to score runs. And, Curry Harn is one home run in the fourth spot. Does he have two? Wow, he had one this week.
He hit one against the Dragons. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
He's got a pair of them.
He's got
all
a pair.
All right.
The Dragons, they swept the Dragons for the first time in 9 years at Nagoya Dome. They finished that sweep off on Sunday. So, congratulations. Yeah,
with a shutout.
Good job. Excellent work.
Well, the Dragons, well, I'll tell you what. Well, this was a battle between the two teams that have been shut out the most in the Central League now. And the Carp are leading the Central League with 13, but the Dragons are quickly they have helped the Dragons catch up a little bit. They're 12, and the Hanshin Tigers are third with 11.
Well, this is the team that tied the they had the long scoreless drought to take over the Nippon Professional Baseball record for most consecutive scoreless innings by an offensive club. So, I mean,
right.
This is not the Dragons we're talking about.
Hell no.
But that was a bad stretch for them. That was a bad stretch for them, and they got through it.
And they did.
And the Dragons are in a bad stretch now, and they'll probably get through it. And then, the Giants are the Giants. The Bay Stars are the Bay Stars. And the Swallows are, like I said, I called them the least flawed team in the Central League. I still stand by them as the front runners, and we'll see who else can bring up the rear end, if it's going to be the rear. But it should be a really good playoff, and I think the teams that are in the playoff spot now are going to make for a good postseason. But we have to see. There's a long way to go still. Long way.
Right. Now, speaking of the Giants, something was a little different this week.
Yeah.
We saw a couple of big changes, especially on Thursday, when all of a sudden the Giants have a new closer.
Starter and next closer. I don't know if he was banished to the bullpen and then they didn't know where to throw him, and then they decided by...
No, Hara decided, basically made a decision on the ninth that Turner was going to be the closer.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically held him back, and the first chance they had any kind of a game, Thursday night, that hit a four-run lead at Koshien, they brought him out.
Mm-hmm.
Not a safe situation, but, that's a good idea. And he came in today in a close game and got the job done. Now, that was his first career save, and so, well, hopefully that works. He's obviously got the stuff to do. He's a bit of a bulldog.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you think he's a closer type, stuff-wise? I mean, he throws hard at times, but I don't think he's... Well, maybe that's why they put him in there. I don't think he's a great, locator of the ball. And I think that's why he struggled sometimes in the starting role, because he'd pitch well for a little while, but he'd always misplace something somewhere. And people would find it for him.
Yeah, that would be the fans in the seats. In the outfield. But the, I think he's pretty good. I think, you know, the biggest thing about a closer is not necessarily his stuff, more than a person who can put, you know, the biggest skill for a closer is having, it's like IQ, you know, more than 120 is kind of a weight. It's extra, it's just gravy. It's not really helping you.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have good enough stuff to be a closer? Absolutely. Does he have, the real question is, what's going to happen when he blows a save? What's going to happen when he has a bad game and he barely survives? Is he going to come out the next day like nothing ever happened and he's, you know, completely full of self-belief? That's the question. You can't do the job.
Can he be a Brian Wilson?
Probably not, because not without hair, you know, some kind of hair growth stuff on his chin.
Well, yeah, he's gonna have to paint it on because the Giants don't allow facial hair.
So. Right. He'd have to wear a clip on.
And take it off when he's working. He can only wear that on the bench. Yeah, you know, my whole thing with him is you know, I really have not really been impressed per se with a lot of his stuff. He seems to be one of those guys who pitches to contact. He gets enough outs to get through some games. And then this year, this was up until this year, and then this year, all of a sudden, you know, he started out like gangbusters, and he was throwing. And I say gangbusters, I mean stuff-wise, and he kept, you know, kept the team in the game, and he kept runs off the board, per se, and he was pitching well, and then all of a sudden he went the other direction, and he couldn't get guys out, and he, you know, wasn't lasting more than three innings a couple times, and you know, that's why I thought, okay, they're just banishing him to the bullpen just to punish him, and this is a temporary thing, and, you know, I still don't think that this is the solution for the Giants. And, you know, they've got all kinds of issues with, you know, who's going to close, who's going to set up. And they've got arms now out there in the bullpen. It's not like, you know, Yamaguchi forgot how to pitch.
Right.
Abeladejo, he's fine. Romero had his problems, but, you know, he's off and on. But, I mean, you know, you find the combination and you figure it out for that day and
right.
You work with it and you go with it. And I think they have enough talent out there to do that. I'm just not convinced that Tono's going to be the answer. And he might be short-term, but long-term?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think it's a work in progress. But I like, you know, I like the move. I like Tono. And I'll tell you, I think the essence of the move is this. Tono's rap has always been that he loses his concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the point of this is bring him in where maintaining your concentration for more than 30 minutes is not really an issue.
All right.
You've
got ADD, we get him in and out in the ninth inning, he's, you know.
Exactly, before he remembers, you know, before he starts feeling comfortable out there.
If it's a good move for them, it's positive for them, it might help them. But, that's a save situation. They've got to get it to a save situation, which they've been able to do the past couple of days with, you know, some guys we don't expect them to.
Well, they made a couple of changes. You know, Haro made a couple of changes, and a big one, perhaps, is he basically lit a fire under Yoshinobu Takahashi's butt. But put it, you know, he did this 3 years ago when he made him a leadoff man, and it really challenged him. It was a threat to his professional status as an RBI guy, but he had his career year being challenged like that. Now he's coming out of nowhere. He's been off and on for a couple of years. He's been hurt. He's had surgery. He's been kicked out of the outfield and onto first base. You know, so he's healthy enough to play finally, and mm-hmm. Hara's got him. Batting second, which is, you know, the position for the guys who bunt, you know, who can't do anything but bunt. You know, the guys with the 275 on-base percentages. And, you know, putting Takahashi second is a brilliant move. The Giants are going to score some runs with somebody who can hit. Why? Because you ain't going to be asking them to bunt.
That's probably true. And, I mean, it's true in that they're not even going to ask him to bunt, but I don't know that this is going to help their offense that much.
I think it is, because it's going to put a charge in him. It's going to when he's batting sixth or seventh and he's back in his comfort zone and he's, I'm Joe Starr or Bart Starr or whoever, you know, he just gets so comfortable, and when he fails, he succeeds. He just kind of going along and until Hara sends the farm team. Well, I think the leadoff move worked a few years ago. I think the number two, he didn't want to bat leadoff. He said it was a professional insult, but he did the best thing. He went out and had the best year of his career. I think we're going to see that in the next couple of months. He should be, who knows, fresh. I mean, these guys practice every day till their brains are hanging out. It's coming out of their ears. So,
as fresh as they can be because of injuries, being able to rest.
One might think so. Like, you know what they do with injuries.
Resting during game time. You know, anytime it's not a game, you're working out.
Right.
You know, you're rehabbing or you're doing something. Right. You know. And the other change I think we need to talk about is the fact that, and it's because of injury, of course, but because Alex Ramirez out with an injury, first lost his cleanup spot for the first time in, what was it? I think it was 465 games. Oh, 469 games.
Right.
And he came in to pinch hit the next day, and then the following day, which was Saturday when I went to the game, Friday
he was out. Saturday was out. Today he was out. So we haven't seen Alex.
Friday he didn't get in, and that stopped his streak of consecutive games played at 985.
Right.
And I didn't get to talk to him. He didn't even come out to bat the days that I was there. But I was listening to the TV broadcast and the radio broadcast, and essentially he said, you know, everything has a beginning, and therefore everything has an end. And this is what the team needs, so he'll just do his best to get healthy and get back out there. And that was a comment that I heard in Japanese, but I mean, you know, he's basically that kind of guy, and I'm sure he wants to do what's best for the team. He probably could have hit to keep the streak going, but, you know, after he makes contact with the ball, he's got to run. I heard he has a contusion on the right foot.
Right.
I don't know how painful it is. I heard about, you know, blood.
Internal bleeding. Yeah.
Internal bleeding and all this other stuff. So can't be that good. He's kind of a big guy. He was laughing and smiling on the bench today, but it's got to hurt to run. So and he's got to be in pretty big pain for him not to get out there.
Well, I'll say if he was a big Japanese star chasing a record, and the team was marketing him, he'd be out there. I mean, there have been guys whose careers have been really damaged by teams doing stupid stuff like that. And I'll say two guys. One is Sasaki, Kazuhiro Sasaki of the Bay Stars, whose arm was hurt, but they wanted him for publicity reasons to pitch in an all-star game.
Yeah.
Another one was Hiro Ishii, who was a really, really good player, but he had a record of consecutive games in the cleanup spot, and he broke his hand. And they made him bat with a broken hand for a couple of weeks so he could get a record so the Kintetsu Buffaloes could sell a couple extra tickets. And he was never really quite the hitter he was from before the time he broke his hand.
Well, yeah, the first one you said if he was a Japanese guy, I thought, yeah, if he had a healthy arm, they'd just send the arm out there to go and swing the bat at the plate.
Yeah. Well, we had this story, of course, we had this story last year with Tanimoto, who said, I'm not going to play because I can't throw.
Yeah, and essentially they said, no, we want you to play out there. You just keep playing even though you can't throw. And then he's the one who went to them and said, you know what? I'm killing the team here.
Yeah. Because they didn't care. They don't care about winning enough to take somebody who's not helping them win if it's a popular player with a big streak.
Right.
They do the dumbest things with streaks in Japan. Just amazing.
Right, and he was an Iron Man who had played, I don't remember the number, almost 2,000 or so games consecutive. Some crazy number. I'll look it up while we're talking here. But
I don't know. But there were people, you know, and Tsutomu Wakamatsu, the former Swallows manager, he said, when I was hurt and couldn't throw, they said, we don't care. You go out and play because we watch out in the field. It's important for our team. Whether, you know, winning is one thing and important for the team is another thing, I guess. I don't quite understand the logic there, or if there is logic. I'm sure there is a rationale, if, no matter how difficult it is to find.
Right.
Just amazing.
Well, unfortunately for Alex, his streaks are over. He's injured. We don't know when he's going to come back. But in the meantime, Chono is not doing too bad in the cleanup spot. So.
No, I mean.
It's not killing him.
I thought it was hilarious. A colleague and I were discussing, you know, Chono's coronation to leadoff man. He is the 75th man to occupy the number 4 spot for the Giants. I wonder if they had a ceremony, you know, scrubbed him down, anointed him with oil, or I don't know.
They probably
it's perverse.
They have some secret thank you, sir. May I have another ceremony that they do?
I don't want to go there.
Well, whatever they have, he earned his number, and he
right.
hit a home run in the number 4 spot on Saturday and had an RBI single. So, I mean, you know, and this is what Alex actually told me about him before. He said, this kid, you know, if the future number 3 spot belongs to this guy, not Sakamoto. And as I actually argued earlier this year on a podcast, and saying that
okay.
Sakamoto, I think, is a great number 3 hitter. But Alex said, you know what? He's a great number 1 hitter, and his numbers look really good in the number 1 hole. But when you put him in the 3 slot, he's a different guy, and he tries to hit with more power, and it affects his batting, and he's not as effective.
Mm.
So Sakamoto should be, you know, he's fine in the leadoff spot. Chono is an actual power hitter, and he should be in the 3 spot. So I said, Alex, you know what? You know, you're the man. I listen to you all the time. I can talk to him about hitting for about 5 minutes and learn, you know, about a year's worth of information from him. He's so knowledgeable. And actually, Dennis Sarfati had held him in the highest regard, said he's one of the best hitters he's, you know, seen. And, I mean, Alex is the man. So if he says that, I got to believe him. And
Yeah, he doesn't. He has a lot of the right information.
You think?
And I think, I mean.
That's why he's been so successful.
Well, he's good at applying it. He also understands the context where he's playing. He doesn't, he's very flexible in a sense. I think that what Dennis understands and what he understands is that they're not in the States anymore, and that gives them areas where they can exploit certain things they can't over there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a, you know, in a professional sense. Not a lot of people like the performance in shows, but you know what? The fans love it.
Yeah.
And he's not hurting anybody. He's not, it's not a negative thing. People don't like it because they wouldn't do it in the States. Mark Kroon said, well, if you don't do it back home, don't do it here. I understand the sentiment, but if it's a negative thing,
mm-hmm.
I'd go along with that. But it's something that brings people to the park. It's something that adds, you know, it adds to the Japanese game. So, you know, I think Alex has been able to transcend, you know, to cross a lot of barriers
mm-hmm.
for the better. And I think that his game's that as well. I mean, he doesn't worry about the way things should be as much as in an ideological sense. He doesn't let that hold him back.
Right.
And he just uses his, you know, the best game he's got for Japan. And that's it's done him really well.
Well, I'm looking here. I think the number for Kanemoto was 1,700 and what does it say here? 66 consecutive games that he played.
Played every inning?
Not the every inning. The every inning he played 1,492 games.
Okay.
Without missing an inning.
Wow.
So he is definitely the Iron Man, and yeah, his skid came to an end last year. Alex Ding wasn't able to catch him, and we always joke about how old Alex is, so I wouldn't even bother looking up his listed age because
I'm not going there. Alex, you get well soon and get back on the field.
Yeah, buddy. We miss talking to you before games.
You do.
Now, our next bone of contention. No, wait a minute.
Hold on. Is this a bone of contention or this is a topic? Which way are we going with this?
Oh, it's a topic.
Okay.
This is a question for.
It's a topic. All right.
The All-Star Series coming up this week, actually. It's going to start on Friday. 6:05 start at Nagoya Dome. Then Saturday at QVC.
Marine Field
out in Chiba at 2 o'clock. I'll be at that game. And then on Sunday in Sendai at Kleenex Stadium, Miyagi, at 12:30 morning. No, it's actually in the afternoon, but you wake baseball players up before noon and tell them to start hitting the ball. It's going to seem like morning, especially if they're traveling those 2 days.
Yeah, I hope, you know, OCI, this year they expanded the number of foreigners to 5. Allowed on the roster, and OCI picked 5 foreigners. You better put them all into that first game because there aren't going to be too half a many happy foreigners in game 2 and game 3 having to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Either that or they're going to all pull a Manny Ramirez where they're back at this clubhouse sleeping. Wake up, you're in the game. Put your uniform on. they added, spots for 5 foreigners, and that they moved the number up with from 3 to 5?
No, from 4.
4 to 5?
Originally, it used to be 2. In fact, they kicked people off the team because too many fans voted too many foreigners to the team.
What are you people thinking?
That's right. Now it's 5, but if the fans vote more, then the more the merrier.
The more the merrier.
So it's the game that it should be.
Except that there are 2 exemptions or special exemptions or exceptions. I don't even know what to call these guys.
We call them active TV plus one challenge players.
Plus one challenge is how MPV labeled these guys to be voted on to. They had a special vote to vote on 2 more players, and it just happened to be
right.
The most popular mediocre pitcher in the Pacific League, without a doubt.
Well, I mean, he'd have to be popular, otherwise the fans wouldn't have voted him in.
Well, I'm not really sure if the fans... Anyway, I don't want to get into that, but...
you do, but you don't.
Yuki Saito, the Handkerchief Prince, has been voted in as a special... I don't know.
Okay, let me just restore a little objectivity here.
Thank you.
Okay, basically, the rules this year, they decided to add a last man, last man internet vote, the way they've done in the major leagues recently, and they picked 3 players from each league who were not picked by the fans, by the players, or by the managers. The managers basically get to flesh out a roster of 31 players that haven't been selected by the fans or players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when that's done, they put the rest of the guys up for a vote, and they mentioned the people who got the 3 most votes in each league, and we had Yuki Saito won the award in the Pacific League, and Giants rookie Hirokazu Sawamura won the last roster spot in the Central League.
Mm-hmm.
Beating out a pretty good player in Takeshi Toritani, but the voting turnout was pretty small. I mean, we're only talking about 4,000 or 5,000 votes for these guys. 3,000 votes.
Was it 1 day or 12 hours or what was the voting window? Who knows?
They might have turned off the voting as soon as Saito and Sawamura got in. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I actually got a glimpse of the numbers, but I don't remember. But, I mean, they were pretty much a wide margin. They won both leagues. But I don't know, man. What is it? I mean, last week I talked about, you know, you got to have popularity for the game or else it's not going to be good. Maybe that's what they did. They listened to our podcast.
And they formulated. You are the faithful all-star god.
I think they had this thing planned before, but thanks for trying to give me credit. No way, man. How are these guys all-stars? There's no way that they should have this on their resume when the books come out next year and, you know, all the list of all the players And it says one-time All-Star, you know, 2011. I'm just going to cross. I'm going to scribble it out in my book because I think it's bogus.
Well, I'll tell you, when you leave the player who is, in my opinion, perhaps the best shortstop in Japan right now, Takeshi Torotani, off the All-Star team.
Are you going to make an ON song for this guy? You've been honking his horn since last week. I don't know about the best.
I'm just saying. Arguably, yes. I think you could make a good case for him being the best. And a lot of people who you can't are there ahead of him on the roster. And now Salmer is ahead of him too.
When you keep this up, you're going to get accused of internet stalking. All right. but yeah, he's good. But I mean, Yuki Saito, give me a break. I mean. And like I said, I think he's the most popular mediocre pitcher in Japan, without a doubt. There's no one more popular who's more mediocre.
Yeah, actually, I would have liked, of the four people, the six people, actually there were 31,539 people voted and submitted a total of 55,846 votes, of which only about 20,000 went for the top three finishers total in each of the top six,
mm-hmm.
three in each league.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a lot of people to choose from, and I wonder how many people got. Yeah, I got my vote.
Mr. Torotani, run, be afraid, be very afraid.
But yeah, I mean, there were some good people, and it's kind of a, you know, it's disappointing, but. Saito Yuki's on there, except as you said, the fans deserve their voice, and fair enough, and the star power, and, you know, like it or not, whether he deserves it or not, Yuki Saito has star power right now.
He does, and so does Sawamura, and, you know, he's probably going to pitch really well, and I like his poise on the mound, he's been really effective, but, you know,
yeah.
he gives up a lot of home runs. And he hasn't really been that great. I think his record is very indicative of the way he's pitched. I mean, he probably, in a different year where it's not, you know, it's not a pitcher's league and the ball isn't dead, as they mm-hmm. say, or the low impact ball isn't affecting the game, if he had these numbers, he would be all-star worthy, I think, just about. But in this day and age where, you know, runs are too hard to come by and you're giving up, I think he's given up 10 home runs. I have to check the numbers, but at least double digits in home runs,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not going to do it. And I don't think he's all-star worthy, and I'm just kind of hoping I'm hoping I don't have to, you know, write about too much about what he does, and he doesn't lose
the
game.
Yeah, your
Don's
nightmare story is that Saturday he'll be the all-star hero.
Oh, that's not a nightmare. When I'm working, and I put the –
Well, if the fans are on the side, and I
go to work, but
I understand that. I'm saying that, you know, sometimes these guys get picked for the All-Star honors for the most peculiar reasons. The most peculiar being that it's somebody the fans want to see win the award. So, or the sponsors are picking the award winners or something.
Right. Okay. Well,
just go with what they think the fans want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right, let's move on to fielding questions.
All right, let's move.
Okay, we didn't get a question, but we got a comment about 2 weeks ago on my blog where, I don't remember the name, but it was Coupled or Crippled or whatever he used his name, I guess a screen name. And he said there was no talk about the expansion of replay when we talked about video replay.
Right.
And my opinion of that is, you know, Japanese baseball is slow enough. We really don't need anything to slow it down even more. But I'm really not a fan of that. I'm not a proponent of adding more replay.
No.
I think, in fact, I didn't even really think we needed the replay on the home runs. It's just that the big leagues had it, and they mimic everything that the big leagues does, or the major leagues, MLB does. And so they decided to bring it in here. And then actually, the year that they brought it in, there were a lot of home runs that were disputed, and it was useful. But
right. I think, the umpires have to make so many decisions. you really want to question is you want to limit it at home. I don't mind the home runs because they're balls that are hit out of play. They're balls where the play is already stopped. They're not stopping the play and trying to guess where people are going to be. There's no questions of that. But, no, umpires' decisions, let them ride. In fact, we were talking about this before, and the topic that brought this up was the situation at first base when Nomura Kenjiro just came out and bumped into the umpire because he didn't like the call.
Right.
And I'm perfectly a fan. I would be very happy if we just removed that from the whole game in Japan because it serves absolutely no purpose. It doesn't help, and I've been through this. I'm not going to rant on this for more than another second and a half, so that's it. But go get rid of no instant replays, no arguments. The manager comes out of the dugout. He doesn't, he gets his answer. He doesn't go back. Throw him out of the game. Who cares?
Yeah.
Get on with the game. Stop complaining.
A lot of people talk about, hey, we have the technology to get it right. Well, just because we have the technology doesn't mean that we should use it. It's not necessary.
Well, the question is, do we need it to get everything right all the time?
Right.
The answer, no.
No, we shouldn't. Because then we're changing the game completely from what it has been for so many years into something that is computerized, essentially. And, because computers don't make mistakes, people do. So, blah, blah, blah. I would go toward okaying or supporting a challenge system in some respect, but what are you going to challenge? Ball strikes, plays at the plate, plays at first, get out of here. Home run or not a home run, that takes enough time. That's enough. Let's get on with
the
game.
The home run scores a run. It can score up to 4 runs on one ball. That's a big deal. It's fair. It's foul. Okay, this is something we can see. This is something we can get right. Get the big thing. It's the biggest thing we can get right. Let's get it right. Everything else, let's move.
Okay. All right. There's one more thing that I wanted to bring up, and that was uniforms. and I know. And these throwback uniforms, the Lions throwback uniforms were great, although they were playing a game the other day against the Buffaloes. It looked like a practice game with both the teams wearing the same uniforms. I don't know if you saw any of the games during the series, but I couldn't tell who was batting and who was in the field because everybody looked the same.
Okay.
And then I saw a game, and I guess this was during Interleague, where the Buffaloes had these bright red stoplight jerseys, and they were playing the SoftBank Hawks who had these powder blue jerseys. What do you call them? The baby blue?
Age blue? Champion blue.
Champion blue.
Championship blue or champions blue.
Or maybe loser blue. And it looked like the Houston Astros against the San Diego Chargers. I mean, I was confused. It was terrible. I didn't know what to
It was a calamity.
It was a calamity. Can we stop this? If you want to use the throwback jerseys, that's fine. But the red, and then we're going to have pink one day. The Fighters have those gold jerseys. They're borderline.
They are below borderline. They should put those things south of the borders.
I agree. I mean, go back to the black ones and they have a teal kind of blue colored ones. They had some purple ones that they wore or lavender, I should say.
Teal, I like the black.
People, I know you want to make money on this marketing stuff and with the merchandising and all this stuff, but man,
but they actually have to try to make money off the merchandising. They're just throwing the uniforms out there to show that they think show people they're acting creative.
Acting, exactly. Acting.
That's
well,
right.
Yeah,
not a lot of action, just a lot of acting.
Please stop. That's all I have.
Okay.
I wanted to rant about that.
Okay, you have heard it from Mr. Gibson. Do something about it.
All right. Well, thank you for the comment. And people, please give us your comments. Email the show at yakujohn@gmail.com. Send questions, send comments, send criticism, send anything you want to. Look for us on iTunes. You can search for Japan Baseball Weekly. This is John Gibson.
And this is Jim Allen.
And enjoy your baseball this week.
See ya.
Bye-bye.